Joining us on the WBGO Journal is Esther R. Fuchs, the Professor of Public Affairs and Political Science at Columbia University School of International and Public Affairs. She's also the author of Mayors and Money, Fiscal Policy in New York and Chicago. Esther Fuchs also served as special advisor to the mayor for governance and strategic planning under New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg from 2001 to 2005, and she currently serves as director of whosontheballot.org, an online platform working to increase voter participation and education in New York City's elections. Professor Fuchs, thanks for joining us.
It's a pleasure to be with you.
You know, we just heard Mayor Dinkins' voice here on the WBGO Journal talking about his legacy and how he got to the point where he was able to defeat Mayor Ed Koch in the primary and then go on to defeat, you know, his Republican challenger Rudy Giuliani in the 1989 election. You had the pleasure, I guess, of having your office right next to him at Columbia University, as he was part of the School of International and Public Affairs for Columbia. So you certainly have a different insight into the former mayor. What was your relationship with former Mayor Dinkins?
Yeah, well, I'm just so fortunate to have had Mayor Dinkins in my life. Pretty much since, as he used to say, since the New York City population evicted him from public housing, he came up to Columbia to be a professor in the School of International and Public Affairs in 1994. And I have been working with him on a variety of projects and his teaching since he got there. And as you said, my office has been right next to his. And so we've had such a wonderful collaboration. And of course I got to see him as he engaged with young people, both in the classroom and in his offices and on the street, in a way that I think people who know him well know what his passion has always been, which is young people, not just college students and high school students, but little children, any kind of little person that you could possibly imagine. This was always Mayor Dinkins' passion. So for me, he was always an inspiration, to be perfectly blunt, not just in the way he carried himself and how he engaged with his adversaries, which were many, but how he mentored kids, how he stopped in the street whenever anybody would recognize him and want to stop and take a picture or talk to him. It didn't matter. He didn't matter where he was going and what he was doing. He was going to stop and engage with those people. You know, he really viewed himself as part of the everyday New Yorker. That's who he identified with most. You know, he was obviously a role model and an icon and a trailblazer in the African-American community, but you know, he viewed himself as somebody who was representing all of New York. And when he talked about his gorgeous mosaic, I hope people understand what that really meant and how profound that was in understanding the strengths of New York and New Yorkers. He wasn't about making everybody the same or trying to convince people that, you know, they should just do it his way or, you know, be like everybody else. He was about respecting who people are and recognizing their strengths and helping people figure out what we all have in common. This is an aspect of political leadership that's so important and that has been so lacking in this nation and in this city for that matter. It's not just that he believed it, he practiced it. He practiced it in the face of extraordinary adversity within his own, you know, his own African-American community, as well as, you know, other communities around the city. It's almost like when you're standing up like that and saying to people, you know, we need to have civil discourse. We need to get this done, but we need to talk it through in a way that we're respectful to each other. This is almost, you know, profound now when we think about how our politics has so deteriorated. And he never changed. He always he continued to use his position and his authority, you know, just to improve people's lives, just for the better. So when he taught, you know, he brought all kinds of people into the classroom so students could see the opportunity for them to come into public service and to do something really valuable. And, you know, he was not in politics for any personal gain. He really was a public servant. You know, it's hard to imagine that almost, you know, when we look at national politics today, that somebody really could come into politics and rather than besmirch it and turn it into a dirty word, he elevated it. He absolutely elevated it. And he came in at a very, very difficult time, which is something people need to remember. Those of us who are in the city in the early 90s remember, but you know, young people don't remember. They think, oh, the city was always this, you know, place of great economic opportunity and where crime was low and people wanted to come here really to pursue their dreams. I mean, you know, New York has always been a place where people pursue their dreams, but in the 1990s, things were tough and difficult. You know, crime was high. There was a crack epidemic. Race relations were a tinderbox, which is really why people elected David Dinkins to begin with. And we had a fiscal crisis, which means that government did not have the money to do the things that he really wanted to do when he came in. And we had the beginnings of the homeless crisis and an AIDS crisis. I mean, and there was business disinvestment in the city. This was a period in which, you know, we were trying to figure out how to bring business back so that there would be jobs for people and they would fill the tax coffers with money so that you could do the programs to help kids and poor people and homeless people and people with health disparities and mental illness. I mean, he had all of that on his agenda and he actually accomplished a lot, you know, in his short period of being mayor, only one term. And, you know, he, you know, it needs to be put in the right perspective. His leadership, both during his mayoralty and when he left the mayoralty, which I believe is equally as important. I mean, he supported endless numbers of charitable institutions. You know, people think, oh, you know, he dressed up in tuxedos and he was so elegant. He went out and he did the work of allowing organizations to use his name and showing up. And, you know, he was a big supporter of Association to Benefit Children, which is, you know, daycare and childcare centers up in Harlem, where he was on the board for many years, and his dear friend Gretchen Buchholz, who he, you know, who knew him and loved him because he did this unstintingly. He gave of his time and he gave of his energy for, you know, the Junior Tennis League and the Children's Health Fund and Posse, which was a college prep program. You know, you could go on. And this was because he believed in these causes and he knew if he showed up, they could raise more money. So this was a selfless thing for him to do. And many people of his stature don't show up and won't do those things. And I want to, you know, I think it's important for people to understand that, you know, he got out and he engaged with all New Yorkers, but he used his influence and his power really to help, as he used to say, the least among us. That, you know, that's who he cared about.
Speaking of engagement, take us into somewhat of a private conversation or a private moment that you two had that you can share with us that really sums up what you've just been talking about, the person, David Dinkins.
I watched him meet with, as I said, young people, and also, you know, very important people would come to his office for an audience, particularly before they were running for public office. They wanted his endorsement or, you know, just for advice, frankly. And my door was usually open. He would most of the time invite me in to meet whomever would come to see him. And, just two examples. There was a young woman who did her degree at SEPA at Columbia, and now she just came off the Biden campaign, and her name is Corinne Jean-Pierre, and she was Kamala Harris's chief of staff spokesperson during the campaign, and I expect she may end up in the Biden administration in a very important role. And she was a first generation immigrant from the islands, and she would go in to Mayor Dinkins for help and advice in how to move her life forward. And I would hear him tell her, you know, not to take seriously the criticisms of people when they're personal and baseless, and that it was something that came with the job, that she was going to be successful, and he always said that to young people, that they had to believe in themselves and believe in the power of public service. And she did, and she just tweeted today, that's why it was on my mind. She wrote her a memoir, you know, where she attributes Mayor Dinkins as being a great inspiration and a mentor to her. It's just one example of thousands and thousands, you know, that I could tell you about. And I loved when people would come in, you know, to see him, to ask him for his help. It was a revolving door of all kinds of people who always wanted something from him. And he never asked for anything in return. And I actually would get frustrated watching him because he was so generous with his time and his support. So I will say one story that frustrated me. I remember it was fairly recently, Reverend Al Sharpton came in to see him. Now, Reverend Al, of course, has transformed himself into, you know, a very different kind of person than he was in the 1990s. And we won't go into that. But in my mind, he was one of the people that contributed to David Dinkins' second term loss. Because he did not receive, you know, he won by 30,000 votes and he lost by 30,000 votes. He didn't really lose much support, but there was an increased turnout in Staten Island and a slight decline in the African American community. You know, and of course the Crown Heights riots, so, which, you know, frankly didn't play as significantly as people think it did in that.
Can you talk about that a little bit, why you feel it didn't play as much as people think?
Because you don't really see it in the numbers. He basically lost by a very small percentage of votes. If people had turned on him who supported him earlier, he put together the first real multiracial coalition to elect a black man in New York, a black person in New York. It was every major city in the United States had already elected a minority African-American mayor. We were the last one in New York to do it. And it required 30% of the white vote in order for him to win, which he got. And he barely lost it. He lost 30,000 votes. He barely lost anybody in that coalition. So that's why I'm saying that while he was personally, you know, upset and, of course, and took responsibility in the end for what had happened, you know, riots, as we know now, since we've recently experienced many, are a very complicated thing to control. And, you know, he was very much hurt by the criticism, you know, that he let the riot go on and that he didn't care about the Jewish community. He was a strong, strong supporter of the Jewish community before he became mayor and a strong supporter of the State of Israel. You know, he stood up to Farrakhan when other Black leaders were not. I mean, and it was deeply painful to him that he was accused of that. And, you know, that was part of the Giuliani poison campaign of dividing people against each other. You know, you can win elections in two ways, by helping people understand the commonality of their interests, what they have in common, or by dividing people. And we know which one is easier. It's way easier to divide people. This is what President Trump did. This is what Rudy Giuliani did and continues to do. And Mayor Dinkins always worked to bring people together, to explain to people what they had in common. And it was, you know, I think it was very painful for him to realize, you know, to realize that some people were willing to take that bait, drink that poison, frankly, in all communities, whether it was the Jewish community or the African American community. It's very easy to just look at what those differences, and he never did. And so when you look at the numbers in the election, he lost by a very, very small percentage. And he won by a very small percentage. Putting together that coalition in 1989 New York was actually quite difficult. And I think he was probably the only one who could do it because of the respect people had for him and because of his capacity to listen and to care and to speak civilly and to always take the high road. You know, when Michelle Obama said, you know, when they go low, we go high, that was David Dinkins. That's what he always did. So, you know, this is why this will be part of his legacy, that he always went high. And I know that is, you know, that's going to be a very important part of what people remember about him and what he contributed to New York City politics, that you can do that. You can win and do that. Kids need to know that. He taught that in his classes. You know, he taught rough and tumble politics. He taught policy. You know, he wanted people to be reality based, but he always felt, you know, you could win by talking to people's better angels. I went into his, and he was so, not just civil, he was gracious to Al Sharpton, always gracious, and he was gracious to Al Sharpton. And I heard part of the conversation, and I just walked into his office afterwards, and I said, Mayor Dinkins, why are you so nice to him? I was like, really? You have to be nice to him? And he just smiled at me. He had this great smile. And you know what he was thinking? You know, it was never going to happen. He was always going to treat people with dignity. He was always going to recognize what was good in people. And, you know, he looked at Reverend Al Sharpton and he said to me, you know, he's doing good work now. He's doing good work now. And I thought, you are a better person than I am. You really are, you know, because truly amazing. And that's who he was. He did that. It came from his soul, not just his heart. And, you know, he was brilliant and he was also tough. And that's what people don't know. They think, oh, because you're kind, you're not tough. He had it all. He was capable of it all, you know. In the public, though, he was very concerned to model his behavior. He knew how important that was. And he never lost his cool. He never lost the dignity. But he knew how to get things done, and he knew how to make people do them, too. And I think, you know, that's important for people to know.
We're speaking with Esther Fuchs, the professor of public affairs and political science at Columbia University School of International and Public Affairs. You know, when you look into your career and the time period and what you've been studying and the people you've been with, I can imagine what it's like to be in your classroom, because you have connections, as you mentioned, not only to former Mayor Dinkins, but you were around for former Rudy Giuliani's administration. You were in the Bloomberg administration. All these men have run for president of the United States, or at least wanted to run or thought about running. And so I can only imagine the perspective you can give to your students. It has to be so fun to be so involved and giving them the day-to-day that you can.
You know, I'm very fortunate in that regard because I actually went into the academy and did a PhD on the advice of two wonderful professors that I had when I was an undergraduate at Queens College, the City University of New York. And I hope people know how wonderful the CUNY system is and how fortunate we are in New York to have a public university. And I went to Bayside High School, which is still there in Queens. And again, you know, amazing public school system in New York, not perfect, lots of problems, but still compared to other parts of the country, you know, so extraordinary. And I went into, at the advice of two wonderful professors, Madeline Adler and Andrew Hacker. Andrew Hacker, who's famous and still, you know, lives in New York and inspires me still, extraordinary mentor. And I thought I was going to study politics. I was interested, you know, I came off of the Together for McGovern, you know, and I was always what people have called me, a pragmatic utopian, which is I believe you can keep your principles and you can have goals that reach for the stars, but you have to be pragmatic and understand how to get stuff done. And so I ended up doing a PhD at the University of Chicago, and I'm a very stubborn person. I taught at the University of Notre Dame, and I was so lucky to get back to New York, first at Barnard College, which is part of Columbia University, and then teaching undergraduates at Barnard and Columbia, and then working for Mayor Bloomberg at City Hall for 4 years on a public service leave, and then coming back and wanting to teach in the policy school, so moving my appointment there because I was able to get tenure. So I not only had this opportunity to get this academic degree and think deeply about how politics and government work, but I got the chance to work on campaigns and to be in government and do it and get it done. And that's what I think I always wanted to do, but when I make you laugh, when you know, when I decided I needed to go back to the university, I had a 4-year public service leave, which is unheard of. You know, Henry Kissinger, they only gave him 2 years at Harvard, but everybody always liked to say that the president of Barnard preferred me at City Hall than at her faculty meetings. So I got to stay with Michael Bloomberg, who is amazing. Just was an amazing mayor for New York at the right time. And that this is, you know, a different story, right? And he had such respect for Mayor Dinkins. And I'll tell you an important story about Mayor Bloomberg and Mayor Dinkins. Mayor Dinkins had not been invited to City Hall for 8 years. And I don't know if I've even told this story publicly at this point. People know this. 8 years, Rudy Giuliani did not invite him back. And it turns out most of the Black leadership in the city of New York were not invited to City Hall for most of Giuliani's administration. And when Mike won, one of the first things he wanted to do was celebrate Martin Luther King Day at City Hall, which he did, and he invited all of the Black leadership, including Mayor Dinkins, of course, to City Hall. And I still remember this event because C. Virginia Fields was borough president then, African-American woman, Congressman Rangel was there, Percy Sutton, Basil Patterson, you know, all the greats of Black politics in New York, and then all the electeds. And I still remember I was standing with Mayor Dinkins, and people coming up to, and saying to him, how long has it been since you've been at City Hall? How long has it been since you've been at City Hall? And they were literally like taking bets who had not been there the longest. And I think it was Mayor Dinkins, frankly, 8 years, the entire Giuliani administration. And Michael Bloomberg was determined to reconnect Mayor Bloomberg, not Mayor Dinkins, not just to the civic life of the city, but to the policy and political life of the city. And he was very respectful of him. And he called him for his advice on governing. And you know, he's quoted in many of the articles now, you know, about Mayor Dinkins' legacy. And, you know, I feel so blessed that I got to work for Mayor Bloomberg, who also understood the importance of Mayor Dinkins. And you know, Mayor Dinkins said to me when I was deciding, because I did Bloomberg's campaign, you know, and I wasn't planning on going into government. I loved teaching. I loved my job. And, you know, being tenured at Columbia University is an extraordinary, great thing. And I knew that. And when Mayor Bloomberg asked me to come to City Hall, I was very taken aback, but that was part of who he was. He wanted all kinds of diverse opinions, and I'm not that easy, you know. I speak my mind, and he wanted me there, you know. He had his reasons, and he wanted me there. He knew, I think he knew why I was supposed to be there before I did, frankly. And I went to see Mayor Dinkins to ask him, you know, what should I do? And he said, go in, do it, girl, you know. He told me to do it. I knew I had to do it.
Have you ever thought about running for public office at any point?
That is very funny. You know, I did, sort of, late, though. And, yeah, you know, you have to have the right moment. Most of my moments have been right. My husband always says that I don't really have the temperament because I take, you know, it's not that I take things personally. I just sometimes care too much, I think. And so, you know, I would show my frustration or I would, you know, be very hurt. You're not allowed to get very hurt. You know, Mayor Dinkins, if he was hurt, you know, you didn't know it. He wouldn't show it. He knew how to do that. I'm not good at that. I wear it on my sleeve.
So if you had, I want to give you also a chance to talk about who's on the ballot.org, but if you had a chance to take David Dinkins to an event, a party, where would you have gone that would have meant the most to you and to him to be there together?
Well, you know, I did have that chance. Isn't that funny? Because that's the other thing he did. He would show up for me. I mean, how crazy is that? But he did. So I'm on the board of this extraordinary institution on the Lower East Side. It's called the Museum at Eldridge Street. It was the first synagogue created by Ashkenazic Jews, or the oldest now, I think. And it's now a museum. And my grandfather was the secretary there for 40 years and, you know, prevented it from being turned into condominiums or knocked down or whatever the hell they do with beautiful old religious institutions when no one can support them anymore. And my family was honored at a dinner and Mayor Dinkins came. He came to be with me, to sit at my table, to stand up and say hello to everybody.
That wasn't the Bella Abzug Award dinner, was it?
No, that was something else. That's my favorite thing that happened. I think that's ever happened to me in terms of awards.
In 2017,
was getting the Bella Abzug Award, right? This is just an award for my, you know, an honor for my family for, you know, their support. My father actually was a cantor, and he his first gig, because of his father-in-law, after World War II, he served in World War II. He's his own story. If you Google him, you'll see a young guy who was an immigrant from Poland who served in the American Army, who who performed the first Jewish services on German soil at the toward the end of World War II.
Mm.
And they still have the audio.
Wow.
And he's in the documentary G.I. Jews. Quite a thing. And his first High Holy Day services was at the Eldridge Street Synagogue. And so we have a very strong family ties to this place. And so, and it does such fabulous work now. It's in Chinatown. And it's really about the immigrant experience broadly and the American dream. And of course, the role that Jews have played in that. And Mayor Dinkins came with me to, you know, to share with my honor and to support me and, you know, some of his glow, he allowed it to shine on me. That's what he did for people.
That's wonderful.
He was so generous like that.
Tell us about who's on the ballot.org.
So that's my that's my nonpartisan civic engagement love child who's on the ballot.org. And I had the opportunity to create this with one of my former students, actually, William von Muffling, about 10 years ago. Everybody who's listening knows how difficult it always is to get information, simple information about who's on your ballot, whether you're registered to vote, how to register to vote, where are your polling place. We're doing much better in New York with our Board of Elections and our election rules. But when I started this, we were probably one of the worst jurisdictions in the country when it came to making it easy for people. So we created this website, a nonpartisan website, where you just put in your address and it will give you your polling location and who's on your ballot and all, and it allows you to click through to nonpartisan information. And then we collect information. We had 100,000 hits in this election cycle because of the craziness around early voting. And, you know, the Board of Election couldn't even put out information about what stamp you should put on your mail-in ballot. Like, so we created with other people in the city who do this work as well and, you know, frequently asked questions and provided all this information. With one click, you can get your voter registration form. You could send away for your absentee ballot. And what I love about this website, which, you know, I had many, many people help me do this, and my students now work on it. This is a complete, you know, Columbia SEPA production. We don't raise money. We just do it. And what I love about it is it's simple. It's really simple. So I recommend it to everybody. We get great feedback on it. You know, and if I was about monetizing things, we'd have made a lot of money on this website.
That's incredible. You know, the one thing that after listening to you talk that I regret is that I'm not a student at Columbia University, because it would be a pleasure to be in your class and
participate. I have great students. I am so lucky, really. I just, you know, feel that way. And I think, you know, that's how Mayor Dinkins felt too about teaching, and the students knew that.
And do they battle you over your political views?
Well, look, I teach urban politics and policy. Now, I used to teach parties and elections for 20 years. So that's a whole other thing, American politics. Now I'm teaching, you know, governing the 21st century city and urban politics and policy, because I want, you know, this is a professional school. And while, you know, I need students to understand that to make policy, you have to understand politics. It's not all about the economists. So that's part of my current battle. And, you know, I used to teach statistics too. So I really encourage my students to get the toolkit that they need. And yes, my students do argue with me, but I really, you know, don't go in with a partisan orientation to these courses. This is about making cities places where people want to live and where we can And I would say people want to live and businesses want to locate. I have a very pragmatic view in that for those of us who are interested in equity and redistribution, we have to understand the nuts and bolts of how things work, because the only way you get stuff done is you have to know, A, politically who is going to oppose you, and B, what are the levers of power and implementation to get things done. So it's not about just having a good idea. That's hard for students to accept. You have to really understand how to do it. And so I focus a lot on systematic thinking about, how to understand politics in the context of policy, and how to implement, how to actually get the work done. And by the way, I learned so much about implementation in the Bloomberg administration, because that's Mike Bloomberg. Mike Bloomberg is always about getting the work done, and he understood that you have to have operational capacity. You have to know how to do stuff. You can't, to get it done. And this is so lost in some of the protests that we're experiencing now. People think there are simple solutions to complex problems. Well, guess what? There aren't. There are not simple solutions to complex problems. And, if we're going into a fiscal crisis, and, I lived through the 75 fiscal crisis, and people would say, we could do more with less. Well, guess what? You can't do more with less. It's baloney. So, you have to make painful cuts, and you have to figure out what your priorities are. And that's what I teach about, how to figure that out.
Promise me you'll join us again on the WBGO Journal.
Oh, well, this has been an extraordinary pleasure. Thank you so much for having me and letting me talk about, our wonderful Mayor Dinkins. We will miss him so much, not just me, the whole city of New York, really.